Thanks very much. I appreciate the light touch on what could get to be a ponderous sermon here and there, so thanks. Now, if one were looking for an example of how the currents of the present affect or determine how history gets told, you really need look no further than the federal holiday that will be observed tomorrow. What to call it has even become a point of debate. Is it Columbus Day? We're going to celebrate the voyages of the courageous Italian explorer, Christopher Columbus, who under the sponsorship of Spanish monarchs found his way to what are now called the North American shores in 1492 and the years that followed? Or is it Indigenous Peoples Day, wherein the decimation, if not the near genocide of the original inhabitants of this continent, which came about in the wake of Columbus, is mourned and some kind of atonement is called for? This conundrum serves to reinforce my view that history is at least as much about how we assess and understand and try to come to terms with the present as it is about events in the past. The events as they occurred and however they occurred do not change. Once a bell has been rung, it cannot be unrung. How we view those events, how we hear that bell, is continually changing, however, because we keep putting on new and different kinds of lenses through which we see the past. And this is why history is such a fluid thing. There's nothing fixed or static about it at all. As one historian has put it, the past actually happened, but history is only what someone wrote down. A similar sentiment was expressed by Winston Churchill, who gave it his own wry twist of British humor when he said, "History will be kind to me, for I intend to write it." The last time I did a sermon about Columbus Day and how it might be rightfully observed was on the second Sunday in October of 1992. Right from this same pulpit, as a matter of fact, it was the 500th anniversary of Columbus' voyages. So I figured 17 years was probably enough time to let go by before I took up the topic again. And a comparison of this holiday, or a comparison of the celebrations between in 1892 and 1992 is a pretty good place to start, because they bear out quite well what I just let off with about the telling and retelling of history. In 1892, which was the 400th anniversary of the voyages of Columbus, President Benjamin Harrison issued a proclamation that marked first officially proclaimed Columbus Day for all of America. The event itself had been celebrated in various parts of the country up until then, but this was the first time that it was made a national observance. By all accounts, the president got a very enthusiastic public response. There was school play across the country, school programs and plays and community festivities and even the composition of an opera called Columbus and the Discovery of America. The holiday was also used to herald and promote the upcoming World's Fair that was taking place in Chicago the following summer in 1893, which invoked the explorer's name. It was called the World's Columbian Exposition. I imagine it was all a pretty good balm for a country that was in many ways still feeling some of the wounds and some of the pain from the Civil War. And since the American nation had nearly reached its present borders by then, we had become, and we were on our way to becoming, that is, a world power even then. And to have mentioned in 1892 any kind of downside to the arrival of Mr. Columbus on these shores, as it affected, say, the native people, would have surely made one the proverbial skunk at the garden party. Well, we cut to 100 years later. The holiday we find in 1992 was as much of an occasion for an argument as it was for a celebration. One of the best-selling books that year was by an historian named Kirkpatrick Sale. He called it The Conquest of Paradise. And in it, he reliably documented how the social, cultural, and religious assumptions that Columbus brought with him on his voyages resulted in time in the near destruction of the native population. You factor in also, in addition to Mr. Sale's book, factor in also that near the latter part of that 100-year span, between 1892 and 1992, we had a civil rights movement in which the descendants of former slaves claimed, in often hard-fought ways, their rights in American society, full rights in American society. We were coming then to better understand and appreciate the cultures and some of the religious and spiritual practices of this country's native indigenous peoples, whose lives and times had well preceded the arrival of the Europeans. And we had waged a war against a non-white Asian population without prevailing over them, without having our way with them, in the manner to which we had become accustomed. We had gone from conquering the Japanese with the help of an atom bomb in the 1940s to being essentially outlasted by the Vietnamese in the 1960s and 70s. We were then, in 1992, and in the years that have followed, we are looking back over 500 years through a very different set of lenses than the ones we had on some 100 years prior. Same set of events, but seen from a different place in our country's ongoing story. 1992, the big argument was, and continues in some quarters to be, over how the Columbus narrative should be told. Is it the story of a brave explorer or of a racist mass murderer? And my short answer is it's some of both, but not completely either one. Longer answer is the next chunk of this sermon. But while the personality of Columbus, with its reputed elements of vanity and arrogance, its personality gets a fair amount of play in this argument, in the end, I think it's really off the point. For what happened in 1492 and the centuries that followed was at least as much about a horrible clash of two radically different cultures as it was about the doings of any one individual or set of individuals. On one side of the ocean, you had Europe, coming into the 16th century Europe, which had kind of gotten old and tired with its wars, with its religious conflicts, social stratifications, and the like. Perhaps without even knowing it, Europe was a continent that needed to break out in some ways after centuries of kind of churning around in on itself. In a more positive vein, there were also some new and challenging ideas that were coming to the fore under the general banner of something called the Enlightenment, European Enlightenment, and that was needing some new kind of growing ground as well, because the environment in Europe at that time, with its religious and its monarchies, was not all that conducive to it. So that was Europe. On this side of the ocean, you had a radically different kind of population. The people here were not uncivilized. They just did civilization in a very different kind of way. The term uncivilized was simply a word the Europeans used to justify their treatment of people who had long been here and who had developed ways of life that served them well. But it is a romanticization, I feel, to call the pre-1492 state of this continent a paradise. For I think this, too, is a misuse of language. And that was my argument with Mr. Sale when his book, The Conquest of Paradise, first came out. I didn't, and I really don't, question most of the facts he cites, very horribly troubling facts in many cases. But he framed his case in a very polemical kind of a way, as if there were a completely pure and unblemished land and people on the western side of the Atlantic, with all these really evil Europeans coming at them from the other side. It wasn't quite that simple. For not too far, not too further, not much further, from where Columbus first landed was the Aztec Empire. It was, in many respects, as sophisticated a civilization as any in Europe. And the remnants of that civilization remain sources of fascination to this day. One of my things on my bucket list is to, which I hope I get to, is to visit that area and see some of those relics and remnants. But we also have to acknowledge it was an empire that was established on conquest, that amassed wealth and power in the hands of a few, that practiced human slavery, and engaged in human sacrifice in their religious ceremonies. And among the tribal peoples who lived in what is now North America, some of them were generally peaceful persons who lived their lives in peaceful ways, while others were decidedly more warlike. Tribal warfare and conquest and the killing that goes with it, I'm saying here, did not begin after the arrival of Columbus. In some men, on both sides of the Atlantic, you had human beings and human civilizations with all the great glories and some of the terrible follies that go with human life and human civilization. But even if we grant all that, which I'm willing to do, it was the arrival of not just the Europeans on these shores, but the cultural assumptions they brought with them that did mean the end, the very near end anyway, of a very different kind of civilization or civilizations that existed here. And the most deadly of those assumptions was an unquestioned